Janice, and I'm going to lead our group discussion today with our elder, Del Hayward. The last class period, we talked about the teenagers. And so today, if we could, I'd like to talk a little bit about your young adulthood years. You had mentioned about the VIA sending you outside to go to school, at trade school. Could you tell us a little bit about that and your life there, where it was, how long you were there?
When I left Middle Cala for that trip to school, they had a big to do about it. I was probably among the first students under the BIA program to do that. So that's when they started sending out, you know, students from the from all over, over 48 and up here. And since it was new, we didn't know what to expect, even when I was getting into it. And my dad, I used to work at in that aviation college where I had all the fueling, delivering fuel to the homes there. There was FAA station there, there was a big airport there, and the gas station, airport fueling, and fuel commercial airlines and military aircraft. I did that for about 4 years. And right after I got married, then we decided I was going to go to school. And it was kind of a, I don't know if I told you, but it was kind of a, up in the air whether I'd go or not, because I wanted to be a fisherman. And I talked with that for a long time, and I told my dad I wanted to be a fisherman. He was going to help me, so if he decided to do that, he would all help me too. And, but I had a way in my mind, the fishing industry at the time was pretty down. And even then, under those circumstances, I still wanted to be a fisherman. And then I was finding, I discussed it with my wife, and she said, well, I know how much you care about fishing. And, we weighed the pros and cons of going to school and me remaining in the fishing business. And we never did decide, discussing about it. And I said, well, just flip a coin. I took a quarter and I said, heads, I go to school. Tails, I stay back and try to make a life in the fishing business. I had two kids at the time. They were very small. I think one was 2 years old and the other was just born about the time we made that decision. And we immediately got into it, and because I had to file my application with the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and it was just a matter of weeks, and like, everything was kind of rushed. I acquired a car at that time, so I decided I want to take that with me. And Dad agreed to take that car to Canada for me, so I'm going to get one. That's how we transported all our belongings. And I set up the car for the trip, and I had to provide a place for my kids to sleep. I put a piece of plywood on the back. It was just a little Ford Falcon sedan. It was a very, compact car. I put a piece of plywood on the back window all the way to the front, on the back of the front seats. It was like a platform back there. It was only about that high, that much room. And I stuffed a lot of our belongings underneath that, I got a rack and put it on top and piled everything on top. And I thought tires that were going to last me the whole 2 years that I'm going to go to school. Planned it all more in advance. The old time we had there. So I bought tires for that car. It was brand new at the time. I bought a lot of oil. kind of stuff I needed for maintenance on my car. And we took everything we owned, which wasn't much at the time, it was just the start of our life, and got everything in that car. When our dad took us across, he knew we were traveling, and I was worried about if I'd go fast enough in this car. Because, I didn't know how fast it would go. I thought that, around town there, we just drive around at any max 25 miles an hour. And we go up the airport, 40, 45. MPOs, I think that easily. And I was all loaded down with all this stuff, and I had to talk to the dealer, and a lot of other people, and not very many people on cars back then. And then, I didn't have any idea how well it would perform on the road, but it did well. At first, you start off at 35, 40 miles an hour. You weren't even going to speed limit, you could catch your bike at the time. You just have to zoom along, You have to get used to it, the speed creeps up, and you adapt it to it. By the time I reached the lower 48, I was doing 65 miles an hour. I had a blowout, and we were going to Los Angeles. That's where I got kind of went to school. And I had a blowout, just really hot that day, over 100 degrees. Doing that, about 65, 70 miles an hour, blew the tire out. We couldn't change the tire right away because it was just so hot to the touch, I couldn't touch the rim or anything. I couldn't take the tire out. So we had to sit there until it cooled down. It was just about a couple of hours, And I had to fix the tire right there, and I had a lot of experience in that, working at service station, that was one of the things I did have. So I brought tools along, knowing that at some point in time I may have to repair a tire, and that's what I did. So I got that off by hand, tire irons, just didn't allow you to do that. Replace that tire with a new tire. Once we got down to L.A., it took us about maybe 5 days all the way from Mount California, from Shreveport. About 5 days. And we stayed right in the car, slept in the car, just on the floor there. Hotels or anything like that. Which is, really bad. But once we got down there, we got down there late in the evening, I remember, so 8 o'clock. And we just got off the freeway, and we got the radio on. There was a big pile of, just right at the ramp, off ramp we took in downtown LA. We just heard it just a matter of seconds after as we were probably still on the ramp, off ramp. You can see or hear them. We knew where it was just because we just went still with signs. Different locations out there. And everybody just got through seeing the sign that we took. Going up and happened right in that area. There was over 100 car pilot. So we missed that one. We didn't get involved, and it's going the same direction we were. It scared the heck out of us. Then we got a hotel. I remember it was a dingy hotel. They gave us some paperwork before we did any issue instructions that, when you arrive in LA, you get to do the VDC and all that. Since we got there late, we remember the interior, the room, it was, you know, all these old wiring that in the old buildings a long time ago, they had these little porcelain standoff, and they had these wire was external. It was, you could see it all right out in the open. Right in the middle of the room, they had this bulb, you know, the one of the jerk string, turn off switches. And we, and for the first time, you know, I've never been in a hotel like that, where we shared a bathroom with an adjoining room. That was a new experience. It happened to be an old Navajo woman. She was in there dressed in a normal dress. I remember seeing them in geography books. And apparently she was going to school too, you know, she was coming off a reservation. So we ran into all kinds of things like this. And we had nothing to eat all day, so it was getting late, so I went out by myself to look for a restaurant or for 15 minutes and just, you know, completely ignored me. You know, like I went to the bar. And then I realized what was happening. And they didn't want me there. They didn't want to do business with me. And I realized, you know, the reason. It was the first time I had a eerie feeling. She wouldn't do anything for a while. She kind of walked away and then came back. And I didn't know what else to do because now that Kevin's there, they're all staring at me. And I got irritated because I knew what they were doing. And I got mad and I guess she heard the irritation in my voice. And she was fine. Didn't want nothing to happen. Made it obvious that I was upset, you know. And I said, I want beforehand or French fries and order. And I stood there until it was done, you know, I didn't sit at a booth or anything like that, or a camp. I stood out there by the cash register and waited for the money guard. Really upset because when I guess my wife noticed it when I got back to the room, she told her what happened. And her and I at that point in time almost decided to go back home. Down and called the BIA office and told them we're here and they told us where to go, you know, to their office there in LA. So we went there. And I talked to one of the people there and mentioned what happened with me. ago. Then I found out later, once we got in school, we got settled there for me. We, from time to time, ran into those kind of situations all the time up down there. So that kind of isolated us from the normal. You know, all those native kids that were down there from the lower 48 kind of bonded and stuck together. And we learned how to socialize and went into the group. We knew where we went out singing in trouble. And that circumstance created a bonding among all of the natives, and that lifelong friendship developed out of that. The school, I mean the BIA, when they didn't tell us, we got down. It was a minimal amount of support down there. We got things, they gave us a room and board, and we got to buy cooking stuff and stuff like that that we needed down there. Like Salvation Army or Second Hand Store, even our clothing and stuff like that. We didn't say anything about it, or do anything about it. And finally, we get together and we compare notes. Finally, we went down to the BIA as a group and said, we don't like where we're being treated. Up in Alaska, the BIA and treatment stuff, right? So that was our protest. And we just like say went as a group, and they all got a spokesperson. When they saw how we reacted, I guess they treated, we got this. Kind of concluded that this is the way they treated the Indians down below. We didn't get that kind of treatment in Alaska. So after we reported, we saw changes come along. Their attitude toward us changed. So we kind of, like a pioneering group, we went through all this. It was silent, we found out later that a lot of those people before us, particularly those that lived down there, they saw a change, in Oklahoma and Washington and stuff like that. And Michigan, of course, they saw a change that comes out. But we, all the time we're down there, we did everything together, as a group. There was probably, I would say, all together in the different trade schools. We had various trade schools that was attended down there by a lot of Alaskans, a lot of Native. And I would guess all together we had probably 150 students. In our electronic course, there was about 30. Now, I'm going to say something about the educational system here, too, at that time. We had a lot of what I thought was top-notch people. In our group. Smart. back on it today, and I said, you know, it kind of fit the profile of the way that the natives were treated, you know. And then I realized, because of they were put in this situation, why we have the problems, social problems we have today among the natives. And they feel they're treated like this, and then a lot of them, especially those in Lower 48, since they were treated like that, they accepted that treatment. And that's wrong. They weren't allowed to grow, you know, mentally. And therefore, there's a lot of smart people that, you know, have all the same a mind is a terrible thing to waste. There was a lot of that. A lot of waste. Weren't allowed to go on to higher education. Now, this was the highest level of education that we had at the time, program that I was in. Not a college. That wasn't even a consideration, college education. A lot of us wanted it, but it wasn't a consideration. There was no money for that. No support for that. It came in time, you know, and well after I progressing. It took a long time. There was one exception to that, and there was one native from, I think it was Washington. He had to have like a genius level mind. And he was the only one that was out of all our group that was allowed go into the college education level. So a guy with a B average or a C average, you know, which is where I was. I'm a C average guy, but with a lot of effort and, you know, drive, you jack yourself up to a BB plus. That's what I did. Let's see, there was a lot of stumbling blocks put in our way, and kept that coming at us while I was at school. But I'd say it's virtually gone now. You can see that kind of explains why we're in the position we are in relation to the modern culture. It took me a long time to put pieces together. You know, smell the coffee, so to speak. A lot of it just recently. You know, people of your age are knowing that your knowledge base already has this while you're in school, and which required me to be a, you know, to get that same knowledge base growth. That had to happen up to 40, 50, 60 years old. And with a lot of experience. So, the educational process, even though if you're in a structured environment, depending on that's good because now you're safe. Now you have really nothing to worry about. But your total attention is running. And I say that wasn't available to me. You know, I had a read up here at the same time at school. And that was a mantra of my age group, you know, you just get, and I have good kids and everybody in that, well, in that whole school. A lot of us started late. I got back in school when I was 27. Got back into the curriculum, structured type of education. what I learned is about life and everything like that is just my life experience. In one way or another, you're going to learn it. It'll take a long path. Do what I did. I had to do. I'm going to be instructed. By the time you're before you're 30, you're going to have the knowledge base you need after you achieve 40, 50, 60 years old.
So, Bill, would you say that by at the young age that you were, by the BIA implementing a program to send you outside for a trade school, do you then or now have, and do you think that maybe that was a way of assimilating you into mainstream America, especially
in that? It was. After I managed the situation down in South Dakota, I told you nothing about it. I started digging into the history. Reading books, reading about my background, Cincinnati. And in many cases, I when I finish a book, I sit there and all go with my mind, I had this internal rage, and you start putting the pieces together, and it was by design, I think it happened that way. The United States did this for a reason. And, just like we're doing with the Iraqi oil, it's by design that we had that war. It's by design they had the war with the Indians. They had something that they wanted. The Indians had something that they wanted. I came to this conclusion after I retired. And once I realized that, it was just like, snap together, because you're building this big puzzle of life, slowly assembling it, like a thousand piece puzzle, and you don't know what it is until you get to a certain point and you've got enough pieces together, and this is where you can come to almost reach the conclusion that you're still building. This is what you guys are doing. But that's behind, initially when I find these things out, I rage internally, and then that's the way it is. Now you got something to compare with. Reading machine, your mind and your life is like a reading machine that never shuts off. And from the day you were born until the day you die, gathering information. A lot of it you don't know the reason why. Even now, you're gonna run into things like this in school. You don't understand it until maybe you're 10 or 13, 14, 15 years into that job market. And you're going, oh, now I know why that structure is like this. Why I'm in class. My dad said this, my grandmother said this. You may have remembered picking up that piece of information that it didn't lock in at all.
So some of what you've talked about sort of sounds like culture shock to me. When you're a young family in America for the first time, probably the community and the state, and it must have been real strange going into LA. I mean, it is for me today. So how did you feel that?
You know, initially I thought it was, there's a lot of things, even like in Seattle, we ran into. I used to spend a year down there, or I'd go down half the summer and and work down there, had jobs down there. And I went to school a couple of times down there, never finishing. It wasn't until I got married and got a sense of responsibility that I said, I'm going to finish. It was more of a shock to her because that was the first time she ever went on to Alaska.
How about your traditional foods? Did your family send
you? Yeah, you bring that up. Even as children, our grandparents used to send up care packages, we call them, and things like that. And what happened there is that the staff members there would take that package and cut it up into pieces. And, it wasn't supposed to be just for us, but yet we had to, as part of our learning, and learn how to share. But that's what they did. They took all that food and did dirty with all the rest of it. Anyway, down there, they shipped us. They knew that we'd miss that, pilot bird is not available in the lower 40.
And it still is.
But you grew up with our cabin, we had boxes and boxes of that pilot bird. I mean, that pilot bird's the same today as it was back then. School, okay. I know up here I found out later that the university here gave the same course, it's an industrial electronic course, delves and transmitters, TV, radio, computers, computer logic. Then when I started school, vacuum tubes, which was, you guys know as integrated circuits today, was replaced by a solid state, and later on by microminiature circuits. But the serial operation of all the same today, 50, 100 years ago, all the same. But the new technology comes in, now we got the video camera, we got the TV. I was interested in the electronics first mainly because color TV was just starting. We had nothing but black and white at that point. I remember running into the black and, first TV, color TV. Cuba, I saw with him, Edison Tech in Seattle. He had it out on display in his big window in the school. And I was the only one then who was breaking technology at the time. And so when we went to school, it was named Black and White. And you got a smattering of color theory toward the end. Coming things and get some kind of introduction to it, and then later on pick up some course beyond the 2 years that we were there, which is what we did, a lot of us. So we had to keep up with the ongoing technology. It was on-the-job training. You took up courses on your own, you had to stay ahead of it. Luckily, the job I had had that OJT program. It was second to none. And, you know, we got certifications and all these different things as they came along. They gave you these certification cards. It's like a little diploma. And I had 8 of them. Like a degree, you know, and then because you could use it that way in our field. And when you go move to another state in another, another field, you can show this individual and serve the same person as the degree and diploma.
How long were you in LA in that school?
22 months.
Could you give us a little bit of a description? I maybe said it, I just didn't catch it. As far as what it was like, you said there were several different trades that were taught.
We started out in radio receivers, you know, AM radio, FM radio. And each course was 3 months long. Finish that, and then when you since and that was kind of give when you got through with radio, that gave you a pretty good background going into television. The circuits are the same. The models the same. All, you know, oscillators and generators and all the stuff that you use, and the circuit that they developed up to that time that using these. Electronic devices, they're all the same. Some will pass than others, and there's, you know, kind of like you apply it. So you learn all these different circuits, and you probably have a memory of some like 200 circuits generally used in the electronic field. Then we went into from there, from TV, and we went to math. Yeah, use applied electronic math. Use it to solve problems mathematically in electronic circuits. No, we gotta use it in like designing stuff, you know, the way engineers would do it. We gotta understand what the language that they so we can communicate back and forth with engineer level type people. And then we went into transmitters, TV transmitters, radio transmitters. All kinds of transmitters, like portable radio, stuff like that. Again, there's a lot of common circuits using all the different types of transmitters. And some software different things, a lot of operators, different powers, and I know how to do that. Again, at a level that you can communicate you had 4 months of, we had to take up, just like you guys do, you had to take up, you know, not only your major, but you had to take up English and math and, you know, in addition to that. Everything had to do that.
Was it like the students who live on campus here, was the housing and everything on
We lived in L.A. We, you know, we had apartments.
Close to the school.
Close to the school or to at least to a bus service at, you know, that went up to your school. So I lived 150 blocks from the school. In the center of LA, straight down on one side is Inglewood, and the other side is Watts. Are you familiar with that?
Mm-hmm.
We got down there when they had that big riot. Across the freeway, you know, and a little damage on our side of the freeway. And our needle was predominantly white people. After that, we were afraid, we used to visit friends on the other side of Watts, but we wouldn't go through Watts because we were scared because, you know, the shortest way, you know, through the street, the firestorm. That was common all over the United States. Big uprising. The black people said, enough's enough. At the same time, the space program was on. First started going to school, they had the first unmanned satellite. And that's the main reason they started the training program we had, because the space industry was just blossoming, taking off. By the time we got through school, we had a bombardment of employers coming to our school, trying to entice them to get out of school and one day at a time, offering big money. Should I go here? I should, you have a choice of where you want to go. Well, is this place or this place? And we all wanted to come back to Alaska, so all of us Native Alaskans found that we went to be kind of originally planned to work only 18 months out there just to build up my resume and move on. That was my original plan. And mainly because at the time when we started out there, the pay wasn't all that good. I couldn't even support a family on it. And I, at that time, had 4 kids. So on the, when I got out of school, we dropped off my, I dropped my family off in Bellicatla on the way up here, and they can visit, you know. And I came up here because we had an opening up here. They wanted us up here right away, so we left our families in Bellicatla on the way up here. The whole bunch of us did that. None of us had any money, so we pooled our money together and. Five of us had a one-room apartment. Got the name of that hotel. It's no longer in existence. The building is partially there. And this is what all of us lived in. Stuff on the floor. $50 a week. Man, that was a lot of money. We couldn't afford that. We got into discussions later as to how we can get our families up here. We got to worry about playing fair up and then we'll try $500 or $600 per person. And for a long time, I worried about that. I worked for a month and a half up here before we finally figured out how we're going to do that. We didn't have any housing. We stayed in that hotel for a long time. And they bus, they used to bus us out to work 13 and a half miles from the island every day. And we got here in February, still quite cold, 20 below, 15 below night. And when they took us out to the site, you know, these old school buses like they had, you know, the standard school bus, the windows would be all fogged, you know, iced up. So when we left the hotel and got on the bus, went to work, didn't know how we got there, you know, because you can't see nothing. And so for the longest time, we had no idea how to get out there. You got your own car or that thing, right? Because what happens, they went all over town to pick up all these different people that worked out there. So it's been an hour and a half in the bus and waiting. Drop the road. And like I said, a month and a half, and one of us finally got a car in our group. And we actually had to help them out. And we had to get loans from that company. We couldn't get loans from the banks when they touch us. The company had to step up and loan us some money. Like I said, it didn't pay us well. The only reason we kind of, which enticed us to stay there, we turned union. Immediately our pay went up double, triple, quadruple in a very short time. Now we don't want to leave. The thing is really good though. The bargaining unit. And it stayed that way for a long time. And it had a big effect on our retirement program. So when we established our retirement program, and you have to go into a catch-up mode. In other words, like a lot of us, like myself, I was 29, you know, almost 30 years old, and I never started a retirement program at all. And I realized, you know, going to an accelerated ourselves that we take additional $4 an hour out of our pay. By that time, we were making $8, and we were making $80 up to $100,000 a year. And when we started, when I was making $9,000 to $9,000 a year, that was a big jump we made. So it was easy for us to set that money aside and when you live that long. But then we're all thinking like that because we're all young men. But it comes fast.
I'm going to ask just one last question, yeah, and then I'll let everybody else ask questions, okay? At the beginning of class, you mentioned that when those of you decided to leave Metlakatla and go to this school in California, that there was a big to-do with their, did you guys have a party or did you celebrate something?
Yeah, they, well, see, it's the church, I mean, the church is where we have this party, so you know, they're very religious back home. And someone cried, and everybody cried, and there were 700 people. It was a big doing. Yeah, they feed up there and keep, you know, like, of course you're gonna have the elder stock in there. You know, this was something that I thought was unique. Out of all the native kids that were down there, I realized the program that we were in was an accelerated program. And they told us at the very beginning that if you missed one day, you would be too far behind to catch up on the remainder of the course. You won't graduate. That's the first thing they told us. So this is a highly concentrated effort here, you know, and then the reason was that they needed technicians bad. So we had a percentage average of the native population down there attending the schools to graduate. You're talking 90-95%. You know, because they all realize, you know, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity and you never see anything like this. And so you had all the reason in the world to try to succeed. And that's what happened. You know, that they were looking at like 30-40% success rate. And they were considering that good. You know, the projection was when they had that higher percentage rate, you know, they just keep doing this.
Anybody else have any questions? What about you, Ashley?
I was sort of curious about how many Alaskans were sent out. How many?
In my field, it was about 30.
And this was all with electronics?
Yeah, this course that I mentioned.
And then, so the 30 that went down, how many came back to Alani?
I would say 80-90% of the graduates, of, you know, native graduates.
And then when you build out your application to be accepted by, some of you might not know what BIA is. Do all of you know?
No.
It's the Bureau of Indian Affairs, run by the government of the United States.
So the Bureau of the what?
Bureau of Indian Affairs.
Uh-huh.
And they felt obligated to provide services to the people that, lived in these lands and the lands that they took away from them. So they established that portion of the government. But, so with, so do you think for the people that were sent from Metlakatla, how many returned to Metlakatla? Because you're in Fairbanks.
Yeah. There was only two of us actually from Metlakatla. Well, actually more. There was other two in the electronic field in my class. And he really wasn't from Metlakatla. He married somebody from Metlakatla. And he went to the same program I did. John Bergenhead. He's an S school. Yeah, he went from St. Lawrence Island. He's back there. And he went down there and he graduated as well. And we came up together up here. And we kind of stuck together even down there. He married my first cousin. We were pretty close. So we helped each other. In fact, he got a car before it, and so he had to transport us all over the place, you know. Well, actually, I had my car, yeah. And I used to ferry them around until they got his car. And I'm saying, yeah, he got a bigger car, so he had to use it a lot. Because we had a big group to haul around. But when, until that happened, like when he used to come home on vacation, we had a vacation about 2 months after we started school, because we get the school down there 2 months before the vacation season came along. So you could start anywhere in this course, halfway, a third of the way, quarter of the way, and you're going to make the loop all the way through it from where you started. And finish there. And your start time and finish time and terminal. Determine when we start. So they're always repeating these 3 month courses around all the time. Mm-hmm. And you just jump in like a merry-go-round, jump in. So when you drop down there, the cycle is almost complete, and then after 3 months we were down there. And we decided, well, we checked out of our apartments, you know, because we didn't want to pay rent or home on vacation. So we decided to drive home. I actually drive to Seattle and fly home. Metlakatla isn't that, it's only about an hour and a half flight, you know, from Seattle. So save time, we first arranged to get on a fishing boat. We want to make a little money while we're home. I got on a boat, and they said, come up here as soon as you can. So we drove all the way to Seattle and got everybody on the plane and flew them home, all our kids, my wife, all the way. And got them home. We went home and got right on the boat and stayed there. And we had a 3 week vacation, so we fished all the time. As soon as the fishing season went north, but that guy had been out in the fishing industry there and caught up and did real well, and we made a lot of money. So that was a big help for us down there, because we used to on Bergamaschi and I flew back to Seattle and drove down and found another apartment. Got one within 3 days, and then we had the family down there from Seattle. See, the airport, the Ketchikan Airport, used to be on our island. They used that old, military base there at the airfield there. During the war, the Second World War. Always had at least 20,000 men on that base. And they were ferrying warplanes to the Aleutian chain all through Canada and into Alaska and